Hi, welcome to the Subway ad for $2.99 subs. How would you like it?
I'll take Drill Sergeant, please.
You got it.
All right, now listen up. I want each and every one of you to drop and give me a 6-inch meatball marinara, cold cut combo, veggie delight, or Black Forest ham on your choice of bread with any veggies you want for just $2.99 each.
Sir, yes, sir!
Subway! Make it what you want at participating restaurants. Additional charge for extras plus applicable tax. No additional discounts or coupons may be applied.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening, I'm Ezra Zayed, and you're listening to Finding the Funny. Finding the Funny is where we'll be speaking to and speaking about people who are in this funny business of entertainment and comedy. So be it stand-up comics, writers, hosts, actors, and beyond, we'll be discussing everything from their work, their inspirations, and what decisions and relationships impact their craft. This evening, we're going to be talking about The Second City, a comedic institution in the heart of Chicago. And in a recent trip to the Windy City, I paid a visit to this legendary space, and since its inception, it has grown into the world's premier comedy club, theater, and school of improvisation. And if you think about all the comedic greats and stars of today on television and film, they would have plied their trade at The Second City. As you walk to the Second City's historic Wells Street entrance, you climb a stairwell decorated with vintage photos of famous alumni, including Alan Arkin, Dan Aykroyd, James and John Belushi, John Candy, Steve Carell, Stephen Colbert, Rachel Dratch, Chris Farley, Tina Fey, Jeff Garlin, Eugene Levy, Jane Lynch, Jack McBrayer, Tim Meadows, Bill Murray, Mike Myers, Catherine O'Hara, Amy Poehler, Joan Rivers, Amy Sedaris, Martin Short, among many others. And to find out a little bit more about its history, I managed to sneak in a bit of time with the guy who runs the Second City Empire.
Just get you to just say your name and your...
Andrew Alexander, CEO, owner, Second City.
Andrew Alexander has helmed the Second City for more than 4 decades and has produced television programs in both the United States and Canada. This includes SCTV, Second City Presents, and Next Comedy Legend. Since its debut, the Second City has been a launching pad for comedians, actors, directors, and others working in show business.
How would you describe to folks back home listening what the Second City is?
Well, the core of what we are and how it all started in 1959, which was an outgrowth of the University of Chicago, where there were two or three people, Howard Alec, Paul Sills, and Bernie Salins, who founded the Second City in 1959, was this group of very intelligent, you know, intellectuals that decided that they wanted to take, was to see how that would look as it was a comedic application with using improvisation to create material. So improvisation is a portion of what we do in our creation of our sketch shows. And if somebody were to come to see Second City today, the format hasn't changed in 55 years. It's a review, 90-minute review, which is followed by an improvisational set. That improvisational set is where they are always developing material for the next show. So, and you're kind of, we kind of use that as a, it's kind of almost a laboratory where you're using the audience as your focus group to see what material is resonating and, you know, what's on people's minds. So it's a unique company theater. There's nothing really like it in the world. And the whole complex, which we have a very large complex here of 90,000 square feet of training center spaces, 7 theaters, and a Harold Ramis School, which has just opened, which is a film school. So it's a unique organization in the world in terms of what we do to sort of influence the comedic institutions in North America.
When it comes to improv in the late 50s and early 60s, what were the roots of how that would manifest itself prior to it being sort of formally organized
on
stage?
Well, improvisation was actually a device that was used by a woman named Viola Spolin in the early 30s, 1929, 1932, to teach immigrant children better ways to communicate. She would use improv games, which she had developed. Those games then became a part of her son, Paul Sills, who was one of the founders of Second City. He used those games as a tool to develop material. So that was sort of, you know, the genesis of modern improvisation really was born in Chicago, you know, through Viola Spolin and Paul Sills.
And that format of improv, which Viola Spolin and her son Paul Sills, the rules and games that were created then are still used to this very day. It's essentially what you'd see live at comedy clubs and theaters, even right here in Kuala Lumpur, where weekly improv shows have become a little bit more commonplace. Now, a familiar reference point on television would be the show hosted by Drew Carey, Whose Line Is It Anyway?
Now, let's go on to a game called Whose Line. This is for Colin and Ryan. And for this game, our audience supplied random lines before the show. Right here, these are for Colin. And these are for Ryan. Why don't you stick that in your pocket? There's the lines. Now, they're going to have to make up a scene and use those lines I gave them during the scene. Your scene is a desperate Colin has come to see his friend Ryan to get advice on dating. Just like in real life.
Colin, what are you doing here?
Ryan, I'm desperate. I need advice on dating.
Colin, did you do what I told you to do last time?
Of course I did.
You did.
I did
you
the best
liar.
Bar,
yeah? You bought her a drink, and what did you say?
I looked her straight in the eyes, and I said I was raised by wolves.
Oh, you see.
And then I howled, and as I was marking my territory, she went right out the door.
And it didn't work.
I'm at my rope's end.
Well, I wish I could help you, Colin. That was my best line. I got all my ways from my dad. As he was lying there in his deathbed, I remember he looked up and looked me in the eyes and said, I'm not wearing any pants. And he wasn't.
Well, sure, that might work for someone like you. You have great calves.
Oh, come on.
You do.
Come on. I'm just your average farmer.
That was Colin Mochrie and Ryan Stiles, and of course, they too came out of the Second City. Now, back to my conversation with Andrew.
And what was the appeal, or what began to be quite apparent as to what the appeal was about improv?
Well, the thing back in those days, sketch shows and variety shows were not really political. They were sort of very presentational. And this was the first time that really human behavior was really being sort of put forward in a sketch format, and politics. Prior to Second City, there was really no political humor per se. So it really changed the paradigm in terms of Second City, how it influenced, you know, comedy going forward. That was the era of Lenny Bruce. Even though Lenny Bruce didn't come out of Second City, that was the era of that whole shift where political humor became, you know, pretty important. But there was not a really sort of focused, if you go back even to the silent movies, you know, Charlie Chaplin and people like that, that, you know, took on sort of a certain political sensibility. But in terms of live theater, live comedy, there was not a lot of it going on.
Why was that? Was it just not?
I think it was the era, you know, the 50s. You know, I mean, it was sort of coming out of out of the war, and I think it was just a sort of a gentler period in our culture that sort of hard-nosed political satire just wasn't sort of part of the menu yet. You know, I mean, it was the evolution of you know, of our society. And I think that, you know, it just became something that that wasn't, it wasn't that it wasn't important. It just, you know, these things all have an evolution. They somehow start somewhere. You know, it's like the blues or jazz, you know. You can't pinpoint what was going on culturally to make those things sort of important, and it just evolved, you know. It was just a societal, there was an opportunity to finally reflect on itself. And I don't think there was a lot of, in the 50s, not a lot of self-reflection.
More after this, as we feature the comedic institution, The Second City. It's Finding the Funny on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive's Employee of the Month, 2 months in a row. Leave a message at the... Hi, Jamie. It's me, Jamie. I just had a new idea for our song about the Name Your Price tool. So when it's like, tell us what you want to pay, hey, 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 and the trombone goes, blah, 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 and you say, we'll help you find coverage options to fit your budget. Then we just all do finger snaps while a choir goes, savings coming at ya, savings coming at ya. Yes? No? Maybe? Anyway, see you at practice tonight. I got new lyrics for the rap break.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Beyond Frivolous Matters. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good evening. I'm Ezra Zayed. You're listening to Finding the Funny. This evening, we're featuring The Second City, and in a recent visit to Chicago, I went over to the world's premier comedy club, theater, and school of improvisation. This is a place that put both sketch and improvised comedy on the map while launching the careers of many distinguished comics, including Bill Murray, Tina Fey, Chris Farley, John Belushi, Joan Rivers, Stephen Colbert, and Steve Carell. I caught up with the CEO of The Second City, Andrew Alexander, a major presence in the entertainment scene and continues to be involved in theater, film, and television. Here's more of that conversation.
And you got involved, I think, by the mid-70s, at least with the Canadian outfit.
1974 was my beginning. And then in 1985, because I was in Canada and I started a television show, which became sort of a very cult hit in the U.S. on NBC, called SCTV, which was Catherine O'Hara, Eugene Levy, John Candy, Rick Moranis, Dave Thomas, Joe Faraday, Martin Short, and
the Canadians have a lot to thank you for.
Well, we did actually. It was the first time in the history of Canadian television that a Canadian produced show was actually picked up by an American network, which is kind of a unique phenomena. So we broke down some barriers there, and you know, we got nominated for a bunch of Emmys. So it was kind of a phenomenal moment for, you know, a kid from Toronto, you know. I'll never forget, actually, when we went to our first Emmys, and we had shot the show in Canada, and it was kind of, you really never knew, you never really, Canadians, as you know, probably, if you spent some time in Canada, you know that they sort of have a certain inferiority complex when it comes to the U.S., so we were all very shy and beholden, sense of beholding, and so we went to the Emmys, and then they put up a clip from the show, and then the audience just went crazy laughing. And it was the first time that I think there was a, you know, a factual where you're in a, with a group, because most people watch television alone. We were with a group of people that everybody responded, and it was kind of a very pivotal moment for, I think, for a lot of us to see, hear that response, and that sort of level of acknowledgement. It was kind of cool.
Yes, SCTV is on the air.
Just trying to talk a little bit about SCTV and how that translated from the things that you guys were implementing in Toronto and Chicago and how it manifested itself into a television show. Was it a case of trying to bring it to a different audience, or was it just trying something new that perhaps television didn't have yet when it came to comedy?
Well, it was a bit of a response to, I had a, you know, my theater in Toronto, and I had a great cast of John Candy and Eugene Levy and that whole group I've talked about. And then Lorne Michaels, you know, launched in Saturday Night Live, and a lot of Second City people ultimately went to Saturday Night Live. And my biggest fear was, because I was probably making $100 a week, you know, barely making a living. And I thought, oh my God, you know, ABC or NBC, as another network, is going to come to Canada and steal my cast, and I'm going to be out of business, and there goes my $100 income. So it was actually more of a defensive mechanism that, you know, I borrowed $35,000, and we started our own television show. And that's sort of how that evolved. And then and because we were a post-produced show versus Saturday Night Live, which was live, they could be very political and very relevant in the moment, whereas we had to be a little more, not abstract, but a little more, our pieces had to have a little more longevity, less, you know, topicality. So we kind of went in a different direction. And so, you know, we took a lot of more cultural, pop culture was particularly our focus, you know, parody, a lot of TV parody, film parody, very intricately woven, you know, a lot of popular cultural iconic TV and film people we would parody.
Certainly in the history of the Second City, when it comes to the alumni and the connections that it has towards something like SNL, but it seems that both were coming up at the same time. Were there conversations being had about different styles and different approaches of this type of comedy being exported out to the masses?
I don't know about conversations. I mean, we were, you know, they were all the same generation, right? And it was interesting how, you know, I mean, we were still ultimately at the core sketch shows. But, you know, because of the production constraints or less restraint, you know, we were able to do things a little more differently. So, you know, we got compared to Saturday Night Live a lot, and we used to follow them in a time slot, you know, in because we were in syndication in the U.S. before we went on network. I think that, and eventually when we were on NBC, we were in rotation with Saturday Night Live. So, you know, I think we were appealed to the same audience. The shows, because ours had a premise, it was basically this small little network that was, you know, on a shoestring budget, and it had these station characters which were, you know, very cartoon-like, and, you know, which was different than Saturday Night Live, which had a more, you know, you had a chance to get to know the cast in a different way, right? Because the cast would actually, you get to know who those people were because they could play themselves a little more. So there was a different, again, a different perspective of how to get into the material. And we were actually very unique, though, in that we were very much, the cast had a lot to do with the creation of the show and the ongoing producing of the show. Unlike Saturday Night Live, which had a producer in Lorne Michaels, our show was kind of produced by the cast, which was, you know, running a show by committee. And, you know, at times that was a bumpy ride.
I think a lot of people don't understand how much thought and effort goes into that entire process and how it actually ends up with an unsolicited nervous laughter.
Well, yeah, I mean, we have some very fundamental rules in improvisation. And one of them is, you know, the yes and philosophy, which essentially means that you're always in agreement, you know, you're trying to build a scene, you're trying to push it forward, you're not saying no. So that in itself is a release, you know, by those very simple words, which is the foundation of everything that we do here, really means how to build a scene and how, you know, there's a certain level of authenticity, real dialogue, you know, that comes out of, you know, a kind of a conversation that, you know, like you and I are having. You know, I'm not saying no, you're not saying no, not yet, you're not. So we're kind of having a moving forward a conversation. If we were sitting here saying, I don't want to answer that question, you know, you're going to start, beads of sweat are going to start happening on your forehead because I'm not moving this conversation forward. And that's the kind of the core of what the work's about. Now, there's a lot of intricacies around all of that. And, you know, in terms of, you know, teaching what we teach here and how an actor really becomes a really strong actor here. I mean, one of the things that Second City has that no other theater in the world, comedy theater in the world has, is that our actors get a chance to perform 8 shows a week for probably at least 2 or 3 years while they're here. That makes you extraordinarily good, you know, because you're getting the reps, right? So, you know, that learning that, and the reason why we have just such a large plethora of comedic actors that come out of Second City is because they get a chance to perform every night, and they also get a chance to express their point of view in the improvisational part of the show.
Now, here's a clip of Stephen Colbert, host of The Late Show and formerly of The Colbert Report, speaking to Keegan-Michael Key of Key & Peele from Comedy Central, and they're talking about the nature of improv and how it contrasts with the world of Hollywood.
Every rule of improv is the exact opposite of show business. So every rule of improv, got your back, I'm there for my partner, I'm succeeding, serve the other person.
Exactly, I follow the follower, serve the servant. Yes, and you're more important than
I am. Yeah, the opposite of show business.
So, exactly. Get out of my way, daddy's talking.
I need to be a star.
You know, one of the things about it is you're saying, like, yes and is basically the only rule of improv. Everything comes out of that.
Agree and add on to it.
Exactly.
Agree and add on to it.
Exactly, and I add on to that. but did that, like, that can be the whole philosophy to live your life. When you were, like, a young improviser, did you find that sort of infecting the way you live?
Yes, every day, because we'd finish a show, and then someone say, do you want to go to the bar? And I go, yes, and let's drink lots of drinks.
That's
and
exactly so, right. Exactly. What's that you want me to put in my mouth?
Yes, and
let's have another round.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's it really is. It's a game for young people.
Young people should never restrict and say yes to everything. No, yeah. I think that it does work as a rule when you feel uncomfortable about something. If there's a place where you can grow in life, then it's a good thing to do. Maybe don't yes and everything. It's like, would you care for some more heroin? Yes, and you know, so maybe don't yes and that. But I think in regard to being cooperative and doing something collaborative with other people, it's super helpful.
Did you ever teach people improv?
I did teach people improv.
That's really fun.
Teaching improv.
And I found out that you, and I'm interrupting you, I found out, because it's all about me, baby. that you couldn't really teach them. You kind of revealed to them what they could already do.
Exactly. That's what it is. They used to say that Michelangelo's statue is already inside that slab of granite. It's already in there. You just got to let it out. Just got to let it out.
You're blowing my mind.
You just heard from Stephen Colbert and Keegan-Michael Key speaking about improv, and both of them, they too were alumni of the Second City. More about this comedic institution with my guest, Andrew Alexander, on Finding the Funny, BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Welcome back. I'm Ezra Zayed, and you're listening to Finding the Funny. This evening, we've been featuring The Second City, and quite recently, I got the opportunity to head over to the world's premier comedy club, theater, and school of improvisation. This is the place that put both sketch and improvised comedy on the map while launching the careers of many distinguished comics, and we'll be speaking more about that very, very shortly. But it was my meeting with the CEO of The Second City, Andrew Alexander. He's also an executive producer, and he gave me an insight about how young comedic talents hone their craft.
And how does it work when some of these young, up-and-coming performers and actors, how does somebody sit in the room and say, well, that's funny, but it could be funnier this way? I mean, I'm just trying to think of the conversations that they're having. How do you pinpoint, say, well, this approach would be better?
It doesn't necessarily start with the funny. It starts with, you know, one of the things you would learn even as taking an improv class here, it's not necessarily about the funny. It's maybe starts with what's the character, you know, what's the, you know, what would the character say here, and then and the behavior, you know, of a character, and then the funny is sort of sometimes the last thing that comes into play, and it's more about sort of finding, you know, what's this scene about, you know, and that's very important. What's it about? What are we trying to, what's the goal here? What are we trying to say? You know, and that's very much a part of what Second City is. So what are you trying to say? And those things start first. And then the funny comes from just that innate ability of an actor that's, you know, gets good at this work. They have that comedic perspective, right, that they bring to the work. So, you know, that's, you find out what the scene's about, you're figuring out, okay, what the point of view is, what my behavior of my character is, and then the skill of a comedic actor is putting the funny in.
Could you give me an example of a comedic actor that has come through these halls and
and gotten you in a real satisfying and gratifying kind of way, in which they applied all the necessary principles that we just spoke about, and they made it their own and they harnessed it?
Well, I would say the one person that always, you know, I mean, there's so many phenomenal people that have come through here, but I'll think of somebody that, you know, your audience might have some familiarity with would be somebody like Steve Carell.
And very quickly, we have a clip here of Steve Carell speaking to Late Show host Stephen Colbert about their time at the Second City in Chicago.
Beck, look at you.
Oh, my God.
Mr. Movie Star.
Oh, yeah.
That's really nice to see you.
It's good to see you too, Steve.
Yeah. Well, we've come a long way, baby. We started off at Second City together.
Yeah.
In Chicago, those who don't know, it's an improvisational theater. What are some of your memories of, like, that time? Because this is back in the, as I said, like, the late 80s and early 90s we were together. Any memories of Second City, like, our time together back there?
You understudied me. The first main stage show
first
you
first time everyone on, yeah.
And I played the baritone horn.
Yeah.
And you actually had to learn how to play the baritone horn.
Yeah, Second City's like a rep system. Like, anybody who's in the touring company, you got hired about a year before I did.
Yeah.
And everybody in the touring company has to go in for whoever's on main stage. Like, you had to go in for the people before you.
Right.
But the part you were doing, you played a baritone horn, which is like a fat trumpet.
Yeah.
And
you
I had never played a brass instrument. And they said, you're on for Carell in 6 days. Learn to play the baritone horn.
It was amazing. It's incredible.
And you really know what you're doing on the baritone horn.
Not so much, but having never played it in 6 days.
You're right. And I went and rented my own baritone horn because they wouldn't even rent me the horn. And I learned it in 6 days. And my lips were just like a baboon's ass. Because I had no embouchure. I remember, the one thing I remember is that, because it drilled into my head, I wanted the gig so badly that the Anchors Away, I can no longer hear Anchors Away as Anchors Away. I can only hear the bass line, because that's what you play.
We can do it.
Do you remember it?
Yeah.
Hold on one second. I go, pa 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 pa.
And Steve Carell was a very hardworking actor, you know, very always brought a fresh perspective on every new show that he would do here. And, you know, it was always about sort of with him finding that character first. And you know, he did a scene called Serial Killer, I think it was, where he was a serial killer, but the scene took place in a laundromat, and, you know, he was talking up this girl and, you know, sort of actually talking about what his job was, that he was a serial killer. But it was a sort of what made that scene really work was the naivety about the scene and the sort of his persona, which was sort of, there was an angelic quality to him. And, you know, it was sort of this guy, you know, my job's a serial killer, but, you know, I have problems like everybody else. And that just the premise of that right from the beginning was hilarious. But it was, the premises was as strong as some of the fill-in laugh jokes that, or, you know, behavior of the jokes of the character that he brought to it. But the premise in itself was phenomenal. And by the way, that, you know, Steve talks about that character as being the genesis of of the character and movie he developed.
40-year-old virgin.
Right. So, you know, that he eventually took that memory of that character and then took it to, you know, the next level, right? Which was a film, successful film.
You know what my problem is? I am not interesting. What am I supposed to say? I went to magic camp. I'm an accomplished ventriloquist. Oh, I am a seventh degree imperial yo-yo master. Oh, do me, yo-yo master. I want you to do me because you're the yo-yo guy.
Are you done? Listen, the problem most men have is they just plain straight up have no clue how to talk to women.
You just ask questions, okay? That's it. Because women do not care about what you have to say at all, anyway, you know? And all they want to do is talk about themselves. So you're just going to let them do that.
Oh, there she is. Go plant that seed, man. Plant it with your finger.
Can I help you?
I don't know. Can you?
Are you looking for something?
Is there something I should be looking for?
We have a lot of books, so Maybe it depends on what you like.
What do you like?
We have a great section of do-it-yourself.
Do you like to do it yourself?
Sometimes. I mean, if the mood strikes.
How is the mood striking you now?
Wow, that totally worked. I literally said nothing as she found me best.
I would have thought you were doing that for
you. You're the CEO of this institution, which is...
Well, producer and CEO, yes. The CEO title I reluctantly have, but, you know, somebody has to be the boss, so I somehow ended up with that title.
And it seems like you hang on to that producer title quite jealously because yeah. It's such an important thing even for you because you're not an owner. You're somebody who came through.
It's something I am very proud of. You know, I mean, producing here is different than producing in the traditional sense because you're... It's a very collaborative experience here. You know, if you're a producer here, it's all about collaboration. You know, you have input from, you know, the actors, the director, casting people. So there's a lot of, you know, even when it goes to casting, there's probably 8 or 9 people in the room when we're doing a casting session, and it's everybody sort of gets a voice and sort of the majority rules. So it's pretty democratic. And, you know, and that's how we run the company. And then it infuses all divisions of our company. We're a very large company now, 60 million. And, you know, we have different kinds of shows now that we create. You know, we had a phenomenal collaboration with the Hubbard Street Dance Group where we put comedy and dance together. And it became an extraordinary piece of work here. And hopefully we're going to find a home for it in Broadway. It was very successful and critically acclaimed. But it was the collaboration between a very modern dance group and Second City. You would say, well, dance, this is comedy. I don't see how that's going to work. But because they came with a very collaborative mindset, and so did we, it really worked well. You know, so it's an example of how we've used the tenets of improvisation to create other types of material, as we did with SCTV. You know, that again was a very collaborative, ensemble-driven production.
I interviewed Andrew in this room, and it seemed like an ordinary meeting room, but behind him, on this huge wall, was this, I guess, mind map? And in the center, it says, "Kudos to all our actors and writers. They made these shows even better," end of quote. And from the center, its tentacles connect out to this incredible range of television shows and films. And underneath them are the names of those who were involved in the making of these programs. All of them, and I mean all of them, at some point in their career, spent time at the Second City.
Behind me, we have a wall that sort of started really, it shows all the influence, the things that we think that we've influenced culturally across over the last 55 years. And it has, you know, other theater institutions that some of our graduates have started, TV shows or movies that are alumni have been in that we think that, you know, that their performance was such that, you know, it had an influence on the quality of the movie.
So I'm seeing something like Deadpool, something contemporary. I'm seeing something like Anchorman or Caddyshack.
Right.
Ghostbusters.
Ghostbusters. I mean, that was Harold Ramis, Bill Murray, and Dan Aykroyd. You know, so they're all three people that came out of Second City. There are some names that aren't maybe Michael Keegan Key, who had his own show, Keegan and Peele, Adam McKay, Big Short, which was Steve Carell and Adam McKay. And Adam, by the way, was in who's on our board. We have an advisory board for the film school, and Adam McKay and Steve Carell and many other Hollywood icons are Judd Apatow. Are on our board, you know. But that particular film, Adam talks about a show that he was in here called Pinata Full of Bees, which is a very kind of cool show that he did in the 90s here, a Second City show. And he used that as the format of that show. He talks about a lot about how it influenced his making of this film, The Big Short, which was a terrific movie and got won an Academy Award.
Hey, excuse me. Hi, honey.
You're running around like you have to right every wrong
in the world.
Okay.
How angry.
Fine. You know what? I'm a
mean guy and I'm pissed off.
You have no idea the kind of crap people are pulling, and everyone's walking around like they're in a damn Enya video. They're all getting screwed, you know. You know what they care about? They care about the ball game. Or they care about what actress just went into rehab.
I think you should try medication.
No. We agreed. If it interfered with work.
You hate Wall Street, but maybe it's time to quit.
I love my job.
You hate your job.
I love my job.
Yeah, so it's television, film, worldwide influences. But I think the other offshoots you can see is the Upright Citizen Brigade, the Annoyance Theater, the Groundlings, all had some connection to Second City, because the truth is it all started here in Chicago. And there's something special about Chicago. It's like the blues, you know, started in Chicago. This is the home of improvisation. It is here. This is the sort of the birthplace. It's no accident that, you know, that the level of influence we've had over the last 4 or 5 decades is pretty extraordinary when it comes to comedy.
Well, I'm just looking at this and then I'm thinking how it's translated to laughs in homes right across the world. And you've been very much integral in being here and in being involved. How does that make you feel?
You know, when you're caught, when I'm taking my last breath, I say, you know, but you don't think of it on a day-to-day basis. But sometimes you get reminders, you know, that, you know, it's we have influence, but you get so wrapped up in your day-to-day and, you know, worrying about, you know, tomorrow and sort of what are we going to do tomorrow. But, you know, there are moments, but maybe when I'm taking my last breath, I'll have an opportunity to say, hey, this was pretty cool.
My thanks to Andrew Alexander, CEO and executive producer of The Second City. If you ever visit Chicago, you absolutely must check out their shows, and you can do so by visiting their website, secondcity.com. And if you missed any part of this program, download the podcast at bfm.my/funny. I'm Ezra Zayed, and you've been listening to Finding the Funny on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Let's say you just bought a house. Bad news is, you're one step closer to becoming your parents. You'll proudly mow the lawn, ask if anybody noticed you mowed the lawn, tell people to stay off the lawn, compare it to your neighbor's lawn, and complain about having to mow the lawn again. Good news is, it's easy to bundle home and auto through Progressive and save on your car insurance, which, of course, will go right into the lawn. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discount not available in all states or situations.